This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made. We want their stories to be preserved so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, it's fun to listen and learn, like we will today with Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba, California, a 95-year-old World War II veteran just back from the inaugural Central Valley Honor Flight. What an incredible week the last week has been around the Central Valley. We'll talk more about that. But let's go back to the beginning. If you're 95 years old, that means you were born way back in 1918, out in Oklahoma, huh?
I was born just 7 days before the end of World War II. One.
And this was Enid, Oklahoma?
Enid, Oklahoma. I was born on a farm, and the doctor didn't make it. My aunt delivered me.
Well, she must have done a good job if you've made it to 95.
Yep.
Did you grow up in a big family? Did you have brothers and sisters?
Two brothers. That's all.
If you're on a farm in Oklahoma and there's three brothers, I bet those three brothers have to do a lot of work.
Well, not exactly. I was 10 years old before my first brother showed up. 2 years later, my second brother showed up.
So the older brother has to do a lot of work. You?
Oh, I had to do the milking of the cows and so forth. I was on horseback once in a while and making hay once in a while. That was all the activities of being on a farm.
What was school like back then?
My dad also was taking care of wheat elevators, and he moved from one place to another, and so I moved to three different places from my first year in school. I was born in a German community, so I was like some of these Mexican people here around here that They probably didn't know a word of English before they went to school, and I didn't know a word of English before.
You grew up speaking German exclusively?
Exclusively, yeah. Our church was in German, and we had lots of activities among the German people, but I never learned a word of English.
When did you finally get fluent in English?
After my second year in first grade. They decided I hadn't learned enough in my first year, they let me take the second year of my first grade.
And shortly after you finished high school, I know your family moved out here to California, ended up in Reedley. Was that because of the famous Dust Bowl that you moved out this way?
We moved here because my dad says, I cannot afford to send you to university in Enid. So he says, I know that California, the less expensive. So we moved over to Reedley, and that was when I started my college career. It was Reedley JC for the first year, and then after that was Fresno State.
And what were your ambitions? Do you remember what you thought you might do with yourself? Did you have some big ideas, some big dreams?
I did. I had ambition to be a chiropractor because my uncle was a chiropractor. He had had only 4 or 5 years of school. He accomplished a lot of things for people, including fractures. And I grew up thinking that the medical doctor took care of medicine, and he didn't do any fracture work. I started thinking that I was going to be taking care of fractures, and that's what I did end up doing a lot.
Well, you'd end up seeing a lot of gruesome things during World War II, but before we get to how you ended up in the Army, tell me about December 7th, 1941. Do you remember where you were and how you found out that America was under attack?
I had been married about 2 months before that happened. I expected to go into the service, but they told me that I was busy with blind riveting. It was individual riveting on planes that were being prepared for England, two engine bomber. So I was able to stay out of the service for about a year and a half.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize this. They think, well, Pearl Harbor brought America into the war. America wasn't officially into the war, but there are a lot of things happening in America that were contributing to what was going on around the world, and you were part of that. So you were in an aircraft factory in Southern California, yeah, helping build airplanes that the British were flying against, yeah, the Germans. What was that work like for you?
I enjoyed that I was able to stay with my wife because we hadn't been married very long, as you know. So I just thought that maybe I wouldn't have to go to the service at all, but they caught me.
It was during the time that you were working at the aircraft factory that Pearl Harbor happened. Did that create quite a buzz in the factory? I imagine that kind of changed people's perspective a little bit. You weren't just building things for England anymore. Now America was in this war.
I thought that we were doing our part in getting things ready to keep Germany from taking over.
Did it surprise you then when the Japanese attacked? Do you remember that making an impact on you?
The only thing that I can recall particularly was that we would have to darken the windows and be prepared in case Japan would come over and start bombing our area.
Was this a Lockheed factory or North American, or what was the aircraft company?
The aircraft company was called Vega. We were exactly 1 mile away from Lockheed. So Lockheed was building planes and we were doing the same thing.
Well, and I've talked to some people who were doing that, and one of the things that fascinates me, and you mentioned blacking out everything, I've read and seen pictures of the way that those aircraft factories were disguised, where they actually had stuff on top of the buildings to camouflage what they were. Do you remember that at all?
No, I just do not remember that. I didn't even know that happened.
You're just carrying your lunch pail and going to work, huh?
I guess so.
And another thing that comes to mind for me, knowing that you grew up speaking German, and I assume at this time you still understood plenty of German. A lot of people have said over the years they didn't realize what was going on with Hitler because they couldn't understand his ravings. They might hear the mania in his voice, but they didn't know what he was saying. Did you ever have occasion to hear or read the kinds of things that he was doing over there?
No, I read about it, but other than that, no, I don't recall hearing him.
You're working at the aircraft factory. You've got a wife of just a few months, and then you get drafted? Was that tough news to take?
Well, I told my wife she should go live with my parents in Fresno because we were living in North Hollywood and she was pregnant. So she had help because of my parents.
How hard was that to have to leave a pregnant wife not knowing if you're ever going to come back to see her again?
I don't remember that, any part of that. I just thought that it was my turn. That I just have to do what I was helpful in the service.
And how was it that you became a surgical technician? Is that something that you volunteered for or requested, or something that they figured out you had those skills?
Well, I'd had a couple of years of medical training in college, so they offered to let me work as a x-ray technician or as a surgical technician. So I chose the surgical, and they sent me to William Beaumont General Hospital near Mexico. So I had some training there, and the rest of the training came with me working for the surgeon.
And this was fairly early in the war that you were drafted. In fact, the first place you got sent was North Africa, is that right? What was that journey like from America to North Africa?
Well, I was in a big ship with about 5,000 soldiers that were replacing the ones that had... We were replacing the guys that had lost their life. So, Africa was no longer in war. We were there only about 6 weeks until... they needed to replace some of us. So we would go on, I know for myself, I was on a small ship going to Naples, and the front lines were just beyond Naples. We could see where the shooting was going on. And then at night, the Germans would come over with their bombers, and they would disturb our sleeping because they always came around 10 o'clock at night, and then again in the morning about 5:30. That would mean we would have to find shelter. We were about 3 blocks from Naples harbor. The Germans happened to hit one of our tankers, and We saw that explode, and that was kind of exciting. That's because it was pretty close.
Well, what goes through your mind? Here you've got a pregnant wife back home. You're not sure if when you're going to be a father, if you're ever going to see this kid, and now there's stuff exploding right down the street from you. Were you scared at all?
I don't know that I was scared. Just part of life. It wasn't scary at all, I don't think.
Do you think your focus was different because your job was to help the wounded and help take care of injuries than it would have been had you been in the infantry or been firing at the enemy on a regular basis?
Oh, definitely. I was real happy to be in the position that I was in, and I'm sure that I thought about it. Right now, I don't remember that I particularly were scared. I suppose we would always run for cover if bullets that were dropping out of the sky were coming close, or we could hear it. So we would run for cover. And one of the things that was exciting, we had a lot of artillery from United States and two from France and two from Britain. Each country had their own tracer color, so it was kind of exciting to see 600 tracers going up in different colors. It was like fireworks, 4th of July, that's the word. Okay.
But the reality is when all these tracers and 600 guns from the three different countries are going up, that's a lot of shrapnel that's going to be landing somewhere, and you might have some work to do, huh?
Well, I didn't at that time because I wasn't assigned to the particular company, and we were still in replacement areas. So what I was seeing was the excitement of, like you say, the shrapnel. When it started to rain down on us close by, well, then we would take off and get under cover.
How close did any of that come to you?
Well, I was real close. You could hear it. And it was coming down rapidly.
How do you keep your wits about you in a scene, a situation like that?
Every fight for himself. You're just not going to stand out there and let it rain down on top of you. No way.
So you were there in Italy from 1943 through the end of the war? Do I have that right?
And then soon after we had landed in Naples, we were sent to our particular company that we would be joining. We'd go by a small railroad because they had narrow railroad tracks and small freight trains. So we had, at night, we would sleep with one. Every other one was lying down on the floor facing the other way, against each other. It was so crowded that if one guy turned, well, everybody turned.
They actually moved the troops on those trains?
Yeah, well, from Naples, I went all the way across to Foggia, and it was going so slow that kids would come and try and sell us oranges, and we would trade oranges for sea rations, things of that we didn't particularly like, and they were happy to get some food other than having to eat oranges.
And Foggia was a major bomber base for American forces during this time. So you were there pretty much surrounded by airfields. I bet you saw quite a few bombers taken to the sky.
Usually about 200 when they would get ready to go bomb the Polizzi oil fields.
And I know you're getting emotional about that because that was one of the most devastating missions where the most planes and airmen were lost was the first raid on Ploesti.
Sometimes only half of them came back.
Since you were stationed there, I'm gathering that your job would be to treat those who came back wounded, but it sounds like it was harder to know that there were so many who didn't come back.
Yeah, that was terrible. One of the guys told me that, he says, I just walked into the pilot's area of the ship, and where I had been standing just before, there was a hole. I looked back there, and there was a hole where I had been standing. I heard some pretty rough stories.
And I'm sure you saw some pretty rough stuff as you're working as a surgical technician. Tell us about the kinds of things you would have to do, the kinds of injuries and wounds that you saw, and how you dealt with that.
Well, my surgeon said You're not good at making doing suturing. So he says, you're not suturing any of our soldiers. Don't you dare do that. So I sutured kids that were playing in Foggia. Why there had been a lot of bombing, and so the kids would play hide and go seek, and then some of the walls would come down, and so forth. And so I would suture the kids, and the older men that had not gone through the service, I would take care of them too. But I didn't suture any soldiers. No soldiers.
Yeah, I guess the surgeon wanted to use his own touch on them. I know this is hard to talk about, and I think anybody out there listening can imagine why when you picture innocent children wounded by the weapons of war. 95-year-old Leonard Heinrichs of Dinuba, California is our guest today. We'll catch our first break now. Still to come, the decision he made later in the war that may just have saved his life. And also, the experience of a lifetime he enjoyed with Central Valley Honor Flight. More of Hometown Heroes coming your way right after this. They say a picture is worth a thousand words, but when it comes to making my mouth water, I don't need a thousand words, just two of them. Mongolian beef. Okay, two more. Ming's Restaurant. And I guess if you want to know where to find it, I should give you two more. Las Banas. That's where I grew up. And I'm guessing Las Banas is somewhere you pass through every now and then. And if you drop in for the Mongolian beef, you might start calling it what I have for years. My favorite place to eat. Period. He may not look old enough for this to be true, but the owner, Paul Cito, has been working his magic in the kitchen there for 45 years now. It's all delicious. If you're a garlic fan, try the Baja shrimp and thank me later. But the Mongolian beef is absolutely unmatched. The flavor, incredible. The texture, tremendous. I can't do it justice with words. You just got to go taste it. One word of caution, do not go on Monday because Ming's is closed on Mondays. So pick another day, tell them I sent you, and let me know if your taste buds enjoy it as much as mine do. That's Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in lovely Las Banas, California.